Welcome to the Literacy Fellows podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Gabriel.
After a long hiatus, we're back with a short series where I get to explore the different chapters of my new book, Doing Disciplinary Literacy, which is out with Teachers College Press the summer of 2023. We've got a little twist in this series. Instead of me interviewing other people, a friend of mine, Dr. Richard Robinson, is going to be interviewing me. So I'll turn it right over.
Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Richard.
Thank you for taking time to talk to me today and help me to really learn more about DL. Part of this is really what some authors talk about is having a DL person and a content area person to talk so that I can learn so much more from you. Because there are things that I want to unpack for students, knowing a little bit of content, but it's just hard. And so I think literacy has the best track record. If you ask people if it's okay to read, right? Well, okay, maybe not. If you ask the average person, are you good at math? They can say no.
Oh,
but
yes,
if you ask someone if they're literate, if you ask someone if they're literate, they say yes. And if we look at the percentage of people in the United States that are mathematically literate, if you look at, for example, Solomon's version, talking about having access to the powerful literacy practices, it would be a much smaller number. And it's socially okay to be mathematically illiterate. So that's why I love coming back to my colleagues because in literacy, because you have such a rich history and you've walked down the road so far, I think we can talk about the walk that you've already had and learn a lot. So I appreciate your time.
That's a beautiful perspective. Thank you. Thank you for being the best reader of this book that has ever walked the planet and probably will ever walk the planet.
You're too sweet.
And that's a kind reading. There's also the idea that like we come by our interest in telling everybody else what to do as a literacy field because we've been because of the testing thing, because of the testing regime.
Interesting.
Partly because it's implicated in every content, reading and writing are implicated in every content area or every area of inquiry.
Yes.
But partly also because it's been under the microscope for so long.
So this is one thing that, I want to stop and make sure we hit this really quick. So in doing PD with teachers, one thing that we often have to get over is the hump of reading and writing. So when you tell a math teacher we're going to talk about reading and writing, it just means things and it carries baggage with them, either as a person or a student.
Yep.
And so what have been powerful ways that you've been able to really get across a different perspective and get across that reading and writing hump when you're talking to teachers in different disciplines?
I ask them to tell me about what they're teaching and how it's used. And then I either ask them to make a list as they're going, or I take notes and think about what are the texts that surround the activities that you're talking about. And those are the, and that's the kind of reading and writing that we're talking about. Because I think underneath that hump, as you're describing it, is you're going to make me stop doing what I need to do this other thing that is not my job, that I'm not trained to do, that I have no interest in, and that I don't think it's. And all of those things would be right, except that's not what I'm asking. So the way to demonstrate that is to say, what are you teaching this week? Or what is your first unit? Or what's the unit you are looking at this year that is new or the most challenging or that you always rewrite? Or what's like, tell me about something that you're teaching.
And I'm sure you've had that, especially in PDs when you get teachers that are probably the rock stars at their schools anyway. So shifting it to where they are not the rock star or where they are not the expert can be disorienting.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And also, I think like I would be hard pressed to find a teacher that doesn't do a little piece of this at some point. Like none of the idea is just to elaborate and extend on something that I think people do without necessarily thinking of it as this is also in literacy instruction. And this is the sort of the heart of my disciplinary instruction or my content instruction, but it's not necessarily getting the most airtime or getting the most value. So just reframing some things that I think people do little bits of.
That's like, no,
this is the diamond.
That's so interesting that you want to go that way. I've tried to, my colleagues and I have done some stuff with infusing computing into the classroom. And the way we first talked about it was, I think they're going to feel better if we just say they already do pattern recognition. But maybe with the DL thing, I am now at a point where, is it okay to just tell teachers or give them the opportunity to say, you could also reframe your entire job, where your job is to help students make meaning.
Yep.
It's okay if you happen to get to standard 6.8.2,
yes.
But let's not just say it's what you're already doing. No, let's reframe the whole thing and just say, let's blow it up and say, your job now is to help a kid see the world differently.
Absolutely.
Your job is to help the kid be able to have power in the world by making meaning through the discipline.
Yep.
Which is not what you're doing, but change a little. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. So, and that's a really, it's an important clarification. Disciplinary literacy is nothing if not a reorientation of the work of teaching in content areas. It is definitely a reorientation.
What do you mean? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, it's as you said, a different way of thinking about the purpose of instruction and the goal of instruction and how you would therefore enact it. The practices like bringing in an authentic text, like asking kids to read and write while they're doing or about or as part of, I think some of those practices are not actually foreign to people, but they're not organized in a way, or they're not emphasized, or they're not given the practice. And that I was saying airtime, but they're not given the time to do that as the central work of teaching and learning discipline. But I don't think that the idea of manipulating text is brand new to any, you know, I don't think these practices are absent. I think that they are not organized for.
Interesting. Organized for, and also organized for students.
Right. That's exactly right.
As far as, wouldn't it be so interesting if we had high stakes exams that in some way got at?
Yeah.
And I think PISA tried to do that. Some they're trying to get more at that meaning making piece, especially. So yes. And I think that you say authenticity is also a threat to fluency and engagement. So it's not just, so what do you mean when you say that? That was one of the quotes looking in chapter three. So what do you mean that it's a threat? Just the fact that I'm not doing something that is authentic. And again, when we say authentic, you do mean authentic to the student? And is it going to be different for every student, or is it authentic to the discipline?
Authentic to the discipline. Like, this is a text that could really be used to do things.
An easy
example is, like, if we're going to be in, if we're in a social studies or a history class and we're only using the textbook, historians may sometimes use a textbook, but they don't only use a textbook. And so it would be more authentic to use multiple sources, not every day, but sometimes. And the use of multiple sources is challenging.
So there are some scholars who talk about students having access to the discipline, but sometimes it can be so far removed from their own experience that can be a bad thing.
Yeah, because it makes it seem like this is something I would never do. So it's part of this.
Correct.
Like, right. Identity resources have to be attached.
There has to be some sort of a bridge.
Yeah. Yep. And I see this, I've seen a couple of English teachers do this really nicely with novels that, like, this has nothing to do with my life. It happened in a different place, in a different time, in a different whatever, but finding the aspect of it that does. And that in itself is a disciplinary practice of being able to make connections that aren't completely one-to-one.
Yes.
They are connecting to other valences. I don't have to be just like the protagonist to like the book. Right. It doesn't have to have happened on my block to, like, you know, in my backyard. Right. There has to be, you have to be able to find lots of different points of connection and use them not only to make it interesting for yourself, but also to make your new understandings or your re-understandings mean something about how you read other books or how you interact in the world, or how, like, you don't read just to have read it. You read so that you think differently and act differently in the world. So you have to be able to find connections and project out connections. That's part of doing English, right? And if we have to do it on Beowulf, then no, of course, like, I'm not going to lie and say, we'll do an updated, like, we'll do a hip hop cool version of this. But although there are hip hop versions that are very, very cool, not everybody is well equipped to do that. And not everybody is well equipped to do that well. And yet the idea that, like, there's something very, there's something ultra modern about Beowulf, you'd have to find it, is part of doing the discipline. And same thing with history. The period may have nothing to do with you. The country may have nothing to do with you.
So interesting.
The conflict, though. Like, interesting. None of it's irrelevant, you know?
I absolutely see how authenticity, if you don't have it, can be a threat to fluency, because you're not doing the discipline in a true to the discipline way. You can see how teachers, again, I think it's that idea you were just talking about, this idea that engagement may mean that you can't engage in the discipline, again, if you're not doing it in the disciplinary, a way that's honest to the discipline.
And the first time or first times that you bring in disciplinary texts, it might be, it is a challenge or unfamiliar. And so you have to be willing to scaffold that experience, and also recognize that this might be a new way for kids to be invited to participate, and there is a learning curve there.
That's so interesting. What are the do you see any disciplinary practices that, this is so interesting, because we've seen it in my own work, just in the secondary classroom, I've seen there are disciplinary practices that have to do with things like persistence and navigating difficulty, that when we have gone through recent experiences in the world, we have really supported students in ways that we needed to just get through the last few years. Have you seen that in any of the work that you've done with teachers, is that teachers are having to get back to, we almost had to work with the discipline in inauthentic ways because we just had to support the child as a human being. But at some point we have to get back to the fact that the disciplines sometimes are difficult and productive struggle is still struggle. I don't know if you just can talk to that, and have you heard other teachers going through that same sort of issue?
Yeah, I think there were two sort of directions that people went when they were responding to the unique circumstances. And in some cases, they went in both directions. One direction is, I'm going to make this really simple so that we can just get through it. The other direction is, I'm going to figure out what is essential here. And we're only going to do what is really essential.
Yes.
And in looking for the essential, we sometimes get the most sort of discipline-specific, authentic ways of thinking and doing things.
Yes.
And sometimes that overlaps with simple, and sometimes it doesn't. So I think it would be hard to say, you know, we've gotten far away from this kind of work because people have had to simplify. Because sometimes, you know, the way they got to simple was to say, what's really important here is that we get good at observing. Like, you don't actually have to memorize the parts of the frog we were going to do if we were here in person. You have to get good at seeing things. And so I'm going to figure out a way for you to do that. And we've stripped it all the way down to that. That lab does not exist anymore. But we got good at, you know, the main goal of participation or of learning a practice that really matters for high school biology, I guess.
Yes.
That has, you know, you could imagine why that would be important for scientists in general. And so sometimes I think people did that. And sometimes people did whatever it takes to pass the quiz, because this is ridiculous, folks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And often I think a combination, like maybe for some things you went toward, like, what is the essential? And you stumbled on something very basic but meaningful. And sometimes you went for what is the essential and stumbled on something very basic and that got you through the unit.
Yes. That's interesting that you say really cut the cutting back. Here where I'm working right now in Indiana, there was actually the legislature was asked to cut the mathematics standards by half.
Oh my. Okay.
So we cut them way back.
Yeah.
So yes, there has been this large shift, not just at the local level, but at the state level, to really push back to try and get back to what's important, or whatever that means. Just, I think education obviously does that back and forth, back to basics. So there was one other thing I wanted to, so a lot of this is about doing the discipline, and we had talked about it last time, about in chapter two, you kind of hinted at teachers having these experiences of what it really means to understand the routines and the practices of the discipline. But I'll put you on the spot. Okay. Yeah. So I am lucky enough to have gone through a weird path to end up exactly where I'm at. So I've just accumulated different experiences than other teachers. I just stayed in school for a long time because school was fun. But if
that
I
is
have
what
a
mathematicians
colleague,
do.
Right? But yeah. If I have a colleague that I have a wonderful, young, fresh out of undergraduate colleagues, what sort of experiences can I support them in engaging in to really feel like they have perspectives on these disciplinary practices that maybe they didn't get the opportunity to engage in?
That's a
So
awesome question. I think you can think of it both in terms of culture, like the culture of how do mathematicians, like what do mathematicians do when they hang out with each other?
Interesting.
I think, and I've only like, I'm not one. So this is like, this is just my observation. I think they get together and solve problems. Like I think get together and they like draw and talk and undo and redo each other's thinking. And that's how they do. So
that's so interesting.
Inviting them into some of the, what you might think of as the social practices. So they feel like they're part of that community of people that do math not just because it's in the standards. Hopefully kind of making some of those, some of the connections to why people use that kind of math at all in the world. Like what is this even for? Cause it's not just for, it's not just your version of getting the guys together for poker. It could be used to like, this math can be used to do X, Y, and Z, which might be interesting or helpful for people to know about.
So let me push further. So one that you had put in the further readings was a comparative case study of engineers' literacy practices from ILA. Really good article, super interesting. And it hit at one that, again, it's antithetical to doing school, peer review in a math class where, again, if I'm thinking of your average math teacher, how often do they think of peer review as a fundamental process of what it means to do math? But if you're talking to a math person, that is a fundamental part.
Yeah.
And so much of the structure of doing school is antithetical to that disciplinary practice of no one does math by themselves.
Yeah.
And no one does it one shot and turns it in without someone else checking it.
Yep.
And that's like the high stakes basis of all of what it means to do math.
Yeah.
So really trying to think about those other ones that Wilson Lopez and her colleagues talk about, these other really cool practices, everything from the peer review to maybe verifying with the physical world. So really pretty. I mean, there are other ones that teachers would understand, like the multiple representations, but these other ones that we don't see as often, is it just left up to at the building level to support teachers with PD that maybe fosters that experience? Or do you, so just in your own mind, I didn't know, do you see teachers actually having this experience? If I had to say, what percentage of teachers in the United States right now that teach math, so just get down to math, could accurately describe the practices that happen for people that do math in the real world? What do you think that would look like?
Again, this is where the tech ed or whatever.
Yes.
Kind of places.
Yes.
Classes, it's these like that seems, seems like that line is unbroken. They're the imaginary line between knowing and doing is not compromised.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, that's so good.
I can imagine, but haven't seen that kind of the PD that you suggested, like the idea of schools being responsible for creating opportunities for teachers to learn about the application of the content they're teaching, like learn where it lives in the world. I can imagine that would be really cool. Sort of the simpler self-guided version of that is to leverage whatever networks you have to see if you can talk to someone who doesn't. And it doesn't have to be for every topic, every lesson, every whatever, but you know, can there be places where you are infusing you're backing it up with some understanding of where it goes from here?
Yes. Really where a lot of that was coming from is you kind of get teachers to think about in your chapter on doing the discipline, really to get them thinking about what are the unique symbols and signs and representations that are used, and really trying to get teachers to think back on their experience as a student. That's one thing that we really have seen in the last few years with my colleagues at the Citadel, when we have had some of the more successful PD we've had with math teachers, at least from their experience, has been when they get to put on the student hat. Mm-hmm. So really, as often as we can, getting teachers to put back on the student hat. But again, that takes time.
Yeah, totally. This is the place where I think leaders can be really helpful, whether it's, you know, coaches or administrators, following kids around for a period or a chunk of the day or the day gives you a really unique perspective on how things are going, how schedules really work, what it feels like, if they have enough time to get to their locker, like all of that business, like picking a kid and following them kind of a thing. And sitting in the back of a classroom and trying to take notes and seeing like what actually doesn't make sense. Like this is how with our pre-service teachers, when they're in mixed company, so to speak, when we've got teachers of different disciplines together in a class, I often ask them to like explain something to their colleagues so that their colleague can say that made sense to you, but it didn't make sense to me.
Yes.
I think it also takes away the idea that like, this is because kids are inexperienced or immature or are not paying attention or don't care, but like, no, this is just really actually inside baseball and you need to unpack it. So sometimes I think leaders can help first of all show intense interest in the instruction that's happening in their building, and second help folks see where there are places where their communication isn't what they think it is.
Yes. Oh, I really like that, and that relates to something that I could really hear in your writing in chapter 2, this idea of focusing on student experience. Yeah. So if I hear you right, imagine if I, as an instructional coach, gave a teacher a period to sit in someone else's classroom and just be a student.
Yeah.
And then talk to that teacher afterwards about what it felt like to be a student.
Yeah. Take the best notes you can and then give your notes to that teacher.
Right? Or just reflect on the experience of, oh no, the entire time all I did was take notes and you did most of the thinking. Interesting. So you had on this chapter 3 where we're really thinking about teachers trying to do the discipline, if you had one piece of advice to give a teacher on how they could get a peek into what it means to do their discipline, what would you say it would be?
My favorite way is to talk to someone that uses that, pick a piece of content, either a concept or a tool or a standard, and see if you can talk to someone that really does that, and ask them about their day and try imagining it. It's sort of like take your teacher to work date. No, it's like,
right.
I actually did this as a sort of my own disciplinary literacy experiment, because I needed to get better at finding, at reading and finding things on the clinical trials website that the government maintains. I was like searching it, and every time I searched, I got a different set of studies, and I was like, I'm sure that I'm just searching wrong. Like I need to understand how these are how these are organized, what language people are using. I see it sometimes things are referred to one way and then another way. I don't know what's going on here. And I need to understand this fast. And so I called my cousin's husband who works in pharmaceutical something and, and said, "Hey, can I talk to you a little bit about what you do every day?" Sorry, I haven't asked before.
Right.
Yeah, I said, "So like, what do you do? And how does that lead down?" And he's in the part of the sort of drug development pipeline where the lab only part, it hasn't gotten into animals. It hasn't gotten into people. He does the lab part. Then is able to kind of follow the winners down the track and see what they turn into and what they combine with and enhance and all of that stuff. It was maybe a 15-minute conversation, and he didn't mean to give me a vocabulary lesson. But in that conversation, I realized that there were several cases where I was reading about, it was two different words for the same thing. And so I was sorting them the wrong way. I had misunderstood one of the kind of categories for sorting. It really reorganized my work and gave me an appreciation of what his work is and into the bigger picture. Reach out for a different reason than usual to somebody I know and pump them for information.
Right.
But yeah, so I think it actually works on a lot of levels. There's the discipline specific, the vocabulary, the organization, the sort of the way things are categorized that I got without even having to ask directly. Because in describing what the work is and how he does it, all of that just made sense. Of course, that's what you call it. Of course, that's how it's organized. Oh, duh. But I have no idea. And then also because, you know, literacy is a social activity and language use is too. And so using language with people about these things enhances relationships. And also now I have this idea of a person, not just the abstraction of like scientists, but the idea of like John is in the lab, not just like
right.
I have like a name and a face to the endeavor, which makes it easier for me to ask better questions and to participate a little bit more effectively in this thing that I need to learn for now, not as a high school student, but as a human.
At the point of need.
Literally.
I love it. So super interesting when you talked about, when I heard you say, of course it's that way. The article that you wrote with Hannah Dostal about the purpose audience format, that could like undergird the entire, what does it mean to do the discipline where you really just ask every time, what is the purpose? What is the audience? And what is the format?
Yep.
So could that be an easy foray into understanding what the discipline means?
100%. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And even if your guess is wrong, adding some logic to it is always a good thing.
And I think it's, I've started to talk to high school kids about that when they write their math, that they're always writing for an audience, even if it's you in the future. And thinking that the format, the reason I write it this way is for a specific purpose. It's because later on, I want to remember if I annotate, I want to remember what I did. Or the reason we write it this way mathematically is because it's more succinct and blah, blah, blah. But yes, that's something I really appreciated in the article that you and Hannah wrote. Really, that's again, what we said in the last episode when we were thinking about, so many of the other disciplines, when we look to our literacy colleagues, you've been so far down the road. You have ways of talking about important things that can be really generative in our own teaching practice, even if it's something as simple as, and those are usually the best things, purpose, audience, and format, just keeping it that simple. If every day when you interact with students, you remind them, and hopefully it's more powerful for students because it's an idea that they can pick up in every class. In every class, if you're not thinking about that, then you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Genre studies. And let's give the credit where it's due to the...
Well, thank you again so much. This helps so much to think about what the stuff looks like. And We continue to enjoy your book, and I look forward to talking to you next time.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it too. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. Bye.